Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the latest episode of the InBev podcast. I am your host, financial analyst here at InBev, Dan Ashmore. Today, we're going to talk sports, crypto, investment, kind of a bit of a blend of all three. So we'll see how we go. But I'm joined on the line by Kylie Fox of KRF Capital. How are you doing today, Kylie?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for coming on the show. Maybe just to begin, what exactly do you do and what do KRF Capital do?
So we are an independent sponsor, so very much like a private equity firm. We invest in companies, real estate, renewable projects, sports, technology, and then we manage the assets, and we aim to be a strategic investor so that we can enhance the value of the companies that we invest in.
Okay, that's very interesting, and I think we want to focus here on sports because, to me, that marriage between investment and sports is always super interesting, and it's really evolved a lot in the last 10 to 20 years. So what exactly do you do in the sports space? Like, what kind of investments are you focusing on there?
So basically, our sports thesis sort of generated starting in COVID. I had never really looked at sports before because I didn't find it a very interesting asset class to invest in. They seem more like trophy assets. They weren't sort of run with the same sort of, discipline that you do in other asset classes. But since COVID, the whole landscape has really changed, and they've become an interesting, uncorrelated asset to the rest of the market. Plus, with the convergence of technology that's actually working now, there's an ability to scale the content that's being produced from sports. In that way, you can sort of mitigate the volatility of earnings that most sports teams have, and you can enhance current revenues and then also develop new revenue streams that are more stable. So what we focus on the tech side is everything from AI cameras that can both record, that then feed into betting, it feeds into performance analytics, it feeds into stats. You layer that onto many different wearables that are available, whether it's on the football boot or whether it's, monitoring your heart rate. There's different technologies for workouts, for gait, for taking a look at technique. And so you can take a look at all of this stuff, both for improving people's performance. It's also great for recruiting purposes. The filming can be great in terms of distribution from a streaming perspective to reach a wider audience. There's different streaming technologies that you can use that can be 3D, that you can manipulate it, that you can take a look at all the stats at the same time. So it's very much like geared towards sort of modernizing how one consumes the sporting content that is more appealing to people today, and especially for the younger generations who definitely consume content a lot differently than previous generations. And then on the output, as I call it, it's on the fan side. So fan engagement, sort of how do you get the fans more involved? How do you create events or opportunities for them to connect with the players, the team, or the broader sort of ecosystem around the sports? Giving people information about like nutrition, about training techniques, about, different events that they can go, meet the team or the players or the coach, or even get to know the community who support the team. So it's all that connectivity that we're here to enhance and also grow.
Okay, that's really interesting. There's a lot to unpack there. One thing I want to ask about is something you said just at the start there. You said like you'd never really been interested in sports coming up to COVID, and it was kind of what I was going to. From an investment point of view, sorry. Yes. So. And that's what I was going to kind of ask, because, you mentioned that like sports are traditionally like they look almost like a vanity asset, like some kind of like a lot of companies or a lot of sports teams don't actually make money. So people say, oh, is it actually investment? But you think that's kind of flipped a little bit?
Well, I mean, if you take a look at some of the exits that are happening right now with the teams, I mean, I think there was one team that someone bought for like $10 million back in the day, and now it's worth like $5 billion. So it depends on when your entry was. I mean, with some of the multiples or some of the valuations that you're having now, I mean, they're exponential. I mean, even Chelsea, Abramovich bought it for $100 million and it just sold for $2.5 billion. Plus they committed another $2.5 billion for investment into the club. So that's like a massive, return. that one can have. Obviously, he didn't get it because of sanctions and all the rest of it, but I'm just saying from a valuation point of view. And similarly, I think we're going to see very strong valuations on Man U and Liverpool as well. So I do think that there is an exit. It's a long-term asset typically when you want that exit kind of return. But we believe there's ways to enhance the revenue because there's a lot of people who are taking a look at these clubs, including us, from like a multi-club point of view, with the idea that, you know, potentially it's not so much our strategy, but other people are trying to, you know, build up sort of a diversified portfolio of sporting assets, you know, media rights across different assets or across different sports rather, and then basically, you know, aim to take it public basically because it's a diversified portfolio. So I think that it is morphing into a more traditional, you know, asset that you can kind of grow and diversify as you did with other industries.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that the sales of Liverpool and Man United, which are ongoing, and Chelsea was recently in the summer, and there's a lot of chatter about how exactly to value these clubs. Like if you look on, you can find reports that, you know, Man United should be valued like similar to Chelsea, or like all the way up to like 9 billion or something. Like the range is just enormous here. Like how exactly do you go about like valuing, like it's such a unique illiquid like standalone asset, like how do you value something like Liverpool or Man United?
I mean, the key thing is always going to be the media rights, you know, digital betting, advertising, sponsorship, and players. So, I mean, those are basically the key drivers. And then the volatility is sort of how well you perform on the pitch, meaning do you get to Champions League or Europa League, which is, you know, other sort of very large ticket, you know, revenue streams for them that is just based on performance. In terms of like the high valuation, I mean, you have your traditional value, that, you know, valuation with the DCF, where you have, you know, you do line by line assumptions. But, you know, a lot of times valuations are determined on the market. So that's why people like it should be Chelsea, because it's just like, well, it's in the same stratosphere as Chelsea. So why shouldn't it be the same amount? But so there's not always like a very technical way. You know, they always say finance is more art than science. So it's not always that straightforward why people buy it. And there's a lot of, you know, whether they're layering in value for like the metaverse, or whether there was some, you know, real estate play on Chelsea, that there's some land there that you can develop into housing over time. They obviously can't do anything with the stadium, that's been tried. So there's a couple of key things, but you kind of have to make some broad assumptions as to what you think you can achieve on the pitch. And then also, you know, what additional revenue streams can you create with the new technology. So I think everyone's kind of valuing that in. You also have an element of where you have a lot of sort of sovereign wealth funds basically buying into the teams. And then frankly, they just have deep pockets and they want to win. So they'll kind of go where they need to go.
Yeah, and like, I think that's absolutely correct, because what's interesting about Manchester United especially is because 10% of it does float on the exchange. So theoretically, you should be able to use that to at least like some kind of benchmark for valuation, but it's going to go for way, way higher than, well, judging by the Chelsea sale anyway, it'll go for way, way higher than what that would imply. And like you say, like there are just so many variables here and they're super bespoke. And then what you say there is a whole new element of like these nation states coming in and buying, like we've seen with Saudi Arabia and Newcastle. We've seen, you know, I just read a report this morning that Qatar looking at buying up a minority stake in Tottenham. Like, what's your view on this new, because this has kind of only popped up, it was really only Man City where the first one I can remember, so it's really only popped up in the last 10 years, and it seems like, you know, this is going to happen more and more. What do you think this, what's your take on that whole development?
Well, I like to consider myself a disciplined investor, so I'm not the biggest fan of all of it. Plus, you know, when you see that Fulham is performing better than Chelsea with sort of a small fraction of their budget, you kind of think, is it all about the money? Is that what really drives the success? So you never know. Maybe they go buy this stuff up and, you know, people get to exit at very high multiples. And but it's all about like what you do with it. So, you know, let's see. I mean, obviously Man City, it took a number of years for them to get up and start, you're winning very consistently. So it does take time for teams to build with new management and new strategy. But I think we'll see over time whether or not like these big ticket numbers and then also the continued appetite to keep pumping money into the clubs as well over time. So look, I don't have a crystal ball about it, but I think it makes it sort of, you know, more challenging for, you know, other investors to come in and, you know, you kind of question whether or not you want, you know, a good chunk of the Premier League to be owned by, you know, whether it's the sister of the sovereign wealth fund or some other sort of closely related entity to be, you know, all owned by a certain geography, but that's the market.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And it's like when you're saying like Fulham. So I'm a Newcastle fan. So we had I don't know if you remember, we had Mike Ashley before Saudi Arabia, and like an incredibly unpopular owner that brought like nothing but like zero success on the field. But when you actually looked at the finance behind, and this is kind of the mystifying paradox, I think, of sports investments, and especially when you're talking the top level, like Premier League, like Newcastle was actually run quite well as a business. It was one of the few clubs that was actually making a profit. Like they actually put very little money in. Like there was no debt, nothing. So, and it's kind of, you see as well with the Glazers and Manchester United, like incredibly unpopular owners, but like, I mean, there are shareholders there at the end of the day, and you know, they're taking the dividends out and they're doing all this kind of thing, which makes them incredibly unpopular, but it's kind of how you're meant to run a business. And this is kind of what it comes down to. Like these investments mean so much to people from like a culture point of view. You know, people grow up with their football teams, they're not just football, any sport. But at the end of the day, like it is a business, and it's that kind of tension that I find quite fascinating, and sometimes what can get at fans, exactly like what we saw for Newcastle, we're seeing with Manchester United now. I want to change tack here a little bit.
It's access that they're buying as well. I mean, I think I saw someone quote, I'll quote them and say that they're like, well, you know, oil is a finite resource, but your entertainment is endless. So, you know, there is a sort of like a shift from that region to be investing in a more diversified asset base, essentially. So I think that's part of it. And I think that, you know, they're kind of just banking that there's a way to monetize it and have it be profitable over time. But it, you know, this is like the cost of their entry.
Yeah, and I think sometimes as well, like you mentioned earlier, the disciplined investor approach that you take, and we're talking about like DCF valuation this, but I mean, there's reasons beyond finance that some of these nations want to get into football. Let's be honest. So it's not really like sometimes the number doesn't even matter, especially, you know, given the resources that some of these oil states have. Yeah. So I think it's very difficult to take any kind of disciplined valuation process or make a kind of sound financial assessment of a lot of this thing. And I'm sure we might see that depending on what happens with Manchester United, Liverpool. But I wanted to ask you, because I know you mentioned when we were talking about the valuation of Man United, you did briefly mention there it depends on a number of factors, and one of those factors was metaverse. Like, do you think, so obviously the crypto world's been absolutely ravaged over the last year, it's been a total bloodbath, and none more so than metaverse. You know, we've seen NFT volumes are down like 90% plus. Like, are you still, do you believe that there could be some kind of tangible impact here down the line? And like, could there be?
I think if you use just like the plain vanilla part of the technology, like the metaverse to me is just an easy way for a large number of people to congregate and talk to each other and converse, right? And if you just think about it as that, then I think it has a lot of value, because I mean, similar to what Fortnite did, where people are talking to each other while they're playing the game, just basically, you know, multiply that by a very large number, and you can have, you know, within one region, let's say 10,000 people kind of be, you know, able to kind of watch the game together and feel like it's live. So I think there's a, you know, when you layer in part of kind of the Web3 type of stuff, whether it's the wallet, the marketplace, you know, NFTs can be used for ticketing. So let's say you buy a ticket. One, it's a memorabilia thing, which is pretty simple. Two is, you know, there's ways for, you know, the stadium not to lose out on resale value. So every time it's sold, they take 20% of, you know, the increase of value on the ticket. And then, you know, thirdly, you can say, okay, I want to order, you know, this food. I want a signed jersey. I want this. I want this experience. You can just tick it on when you're buying your ticket. So it actually makes it easier to actually, you know, get more engaged and have more kind of experience or product to acquire, you know, during the game or around the game, essentially. So I think those are the things. It's not so much about creating a JPEG and trying to sell it, or even like, you know, potentially like the playing cards that people were doing, like autograph.io. I think there's a lot more subtle ways to use that type of technology that is useful for the sporting world and for the fans.
Yeah, and I know like we've seen a lot of the early movers, like during the pandemic bull market, like Top Shot, for example, in the NBA were massive, and there was So Rare. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but they were the footballing equivalent. And a lot of these, their valuations have come massively down. You know, the volumes are down as well. But you're saying that's still
they changed the technology. Business model from like the beta version. So, you know, initially it was quite exciting because they created it. They made sure there was a marketplace. People were able to trade. They got, you know, they could start with a dollar and go all the way up to 10,000. But then they started to rejig the business model, and it turned a lot of people off. So I think you kind of have to stay true to what is attractive to the consumer. And I think that too many businesses these days have lost sight of that. And I think it's important that, you know, when we use these new technology, we get back to actually serving the consumer.
I think you're definitely not wrong there. And I think, yeah, that coupled with the macro landscape, it's just a pretty nasty cocktail for the whole thing. But it's interesting hearing that. Yeah, and do you think like that blockchain technology is like a game changer? Like if we didn't have this, I know you talked like metaverse can bring people together, and the metaverse is sort of like synonymous with blockchain technology now. Do you think like blockchain itself adds so many advantages over maybe like trying to, I don't know, the Web 2 world, I guess?
I mean, blockchain is just like a, you know, just a way to kind of maintain data, right? And there are some issues with it because it is actually very, they keep saying it's decentralized, but it's not. I think they need to invest a lot more into the cybersecurity element of it. So, blockchain is just like, it's just an output, really. It's like, it's what you're interfacing with, and what you do behind it, I think is more important. And then it's also like what utility. So I think marketplace building is great. I think gaming has proven that out, that you can create a marketplace with people. And with that, you create that community. So I think it's very much about creating the narrative, creating the community, using whatever tools are most appropriate. But we're also very much into the technical side, the biometric side, that type of stuff. And then, you know, the NFTs and this type of stuff is mostly just almost like a communication tool to some extent of, you know, this is what you can buy to go do this experience, or this is what you can add on to buying a ticket. It's not so much to be used as, you know, the way that, you know, some of it has been used from a speculation point of view.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's a fair way to look at it. Before we finish up, like what sports, we've talked a lot about football, we've mentioned NBA a little bit, like what sports do you guys look at, or is it just a whole range?
We really want to target global sports. So football, obviously, we tennis as well, we like, and we also like the individual sports. To some extent, rugby and, you know, basically the NBA. Those are, for us, is like truly global sports. Obviously, to some extent, golf can be, but we haven't quite gotten it. But we've been very much focused really on tennis and football to date. Then we opportunistically look at the NBA, but it's a competitive field, and it's, you know, similar to Chelsea and Man U in terms of like valuations. Although some people are investing in European teams for a bit more value, and that's a great place to also recruit players as well.
Yeah, like some of the valuations are nuts. And let me ask you, like, because I know that like the business model between European sports and American sports is vastly different with regards to franchises. Does this make a massive impact on valuations? Because obviously, like if you look at the NFL or the NBA, the MLB, all the American sports, there's no relegation. These are franchises. You know, we've seen cases of teams moving from city to city, like the Raiders moved from Oakland to Vegas, for example, last year, the year before. It's quite common. Whereas like this in Europe was just unheard of. Like a Premier League, you know, Chelsea would never move to Newcastle or something. It would just be insane. Yeah. And there's obviously, you know, there's relegation as well. Like Newcastle were relegated twice. So like, does that make a huge difference with regards to valuation? Because a lot of those American valuations seem huge for those franchises.
Yes, but they're very profitable because they have, you know, they have salary caps. They have, you know, they have structures in place to have it be profitable. Plus the media rights for the NFL is quite strong. So, I mean, and also they also kind of level things out with the drafting technique so that if you had performed well 1 year, then you get sort of your top draft picks the next year, and that's supposed to help kind of balance it out a bit. Look, every sport has kind of evolved in its own way and has its own like pluses and minuses to it, but there's just also less teams of the NFL, right? So if you think about Europe, how many teams between the different divisions there are, it's just massive, where we just have like the NFL. And the only thing that really differentiates them is who gets to the playoffs and who doesn't.
Yeah, true. It really is like a super exclusive club. And like you say, even if you're the worst team, like the way the draft and the salary cap, it's kind of all built around parity. Whereas like, yeah, when you're a European football team, you kind of just need to, in order to compete with Man City and Chelsea, and you kind of just need Saudi Arabia or someone to come in and buy you. Otherwise, you've got no hope. Like
potentially, so, then why is Fulham doing so well?
well, I like Fulham. They play some good football. We'll see if that can last.
Yeah, I mean, have a deep bench for injuries and stuff like that.
It does, and it's just very hard to. I mean, I always point towards that Leicester City story back in 2016. It's just the craziest thing ever. Like, it's just, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that. That to me is like the kind of thing that can only happen in American sports. You know, one of the worst teams in the league winning next year, because, you know, we don't have that parity. We don't have the those clubs don't have the millions to spend. They don't have the players. So it really is just, it's I find it very interesting just comparing the different dynamics between, each side of the Atlantic, and then when you layer in the finance and the valuation side of it to see what effects it has there. I think we're running out of time here, but covered a lot of bases, and super interesting discussion. Always nice to talk about sports and investing. So thanks Kylie for coming on.
Great to meet you, Dan.